This is Bob, Groz, and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Groz, and Tom. The show of record is officially underway. Today's episode features an appearance by the one, the only El Hombre. Michael Bradley joins us at 1 o'clock today. Good to have him, as we do every week. Mariners get back to business tonight, so you've got some baseball to look forward to. Hopefully they give you a reason to look forward to it. That'd be fun.
But they're playing the big boys now.
Yeah, they're on the road in Milwaukee against a very good Milwaukee Brewers team after they had a winning homestand against the two worst teams in all of baseball. But they did win 4 of 7. So there's that.
We should have the Milwaukee Brewers back in the American League, by the way. We should unbalance the amount of teams in each league so we can get rid of this interleague nonsense every couple of weeks. Wouldn't you agree, Bob and Groz here?
I think you can get rid of the interleague nonsense without moving the team back. It doesn't have to be unbalanced. Just stop doing it.
Well, how would you, if you have 15 teams in each league, how would you do that?
You just play, it's math. You can figure out.
You wouldn't understand.
You figure out 162 games, but
no, this math I understand. Teams. but to have teams playing every night, you need to have. If you were to do away with the interleague,
you go
16 on one side and 14
on
the other.
About.
So let's move the Brewers back, or get rid of the Astros, or one way or the other.
Right.
And then we don't have to worry about interleague. We don't have to worry about the Astros. We
get two, I like getting
get
rid
a
of
two
the
for
Astros.
One right there.
Just get rid of them.
Get rid of them.
They're
Send
gone.
Them back
Disperse
to the
them.
National League.
Exactly. Can you imagine the
it's
AL?
Math, Tom.
Yeah. I understood that one though. The AL West with just Texas, Seattle, Oakland, and the Angels would be a lot more comfortable, wouldn't it?
Right.
Well,
now,
yeah, you'd like your chances better, even though you're still in dead last.
It's well, not it wouldn't just matter right now, but you know.
Yeah, you know, years down the road, which is what's being talked about now. Jeff Passan was a guest of the morning show, as he is every other week. And we'll get into a bit of what he had to say. Scott Servais is a guy. We asked, who did we have on last? Greg Johns.
Yeah.
Asking him about, we had him on yesterday, and I asked him to give a grade to Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais. And he was like, you know, it wasn't too harsh, wasn't too flattering. I mean, it's hard to give anybody an A when you've got a team playing the way they're playing. Hard to give them an F when you don't really have a good team to field out there. Talking about Scott Servais.
Right.
I think I'd give him probably a C+. See, somewhere in there. I mean, I'm not sure what a realistic, as much heat as he takes. We get texts all the time. I get tweets. I'm sure you guys get them. He doesn't know what he's doing. Fire him. He's a disaster. They're not going to win with him. I'm thinking, what manager would you like to put in this spot right now and expect an entirely different outcome?
I don't think you can evaluate this spot right now all by itself. You're right about that. I mean, they talked about that. There's not some way he's misusing his bullpen of that, you know, he could be doing it better, or anyone could be doing it better.
Well, no, as soon as he puts in a reliever that blows up, people go, dumb.
they all blow up. I mean, so there isn't one.
I got to tell you, there hasn't been one situation this year, not one, where I thought, you know what, Scott Servais really blew it with a bullpen decision. Because everybody who's out there is basically the same.
Yes, that's just, to me, frustration speaking. You just want to lash out. How did you do that? Why would you do that? Because you're just tired of it. I get it as a fan. You get frustrated, but you don't have options out there. Your options are pretty much all the same.
That said, and we'll play this bite in a second here, but that said, there are not many managers that can survive a long, sustained period of losing. Now, Servais is interesting because he and DePoto came in here.
Together.
Right. They came in here together. They won in 2016 a little bit, and they had a winning record. They lost in 2017. They had a winning record again last year. Then they flipped it to the rebuild here. So it's not like we're in year 5 of losing, even though I'm sure it seems that way to Mariner fans. But if you look around, there are I counted this about a month ago. I couldn't find one manager other than Don Mattingly who survived 4 straight years of sub-500 baseball.
They brought up a guy this morning, Ned Yost.
He only had 3.
Okay.
He had 3 years of sub-500. Then they started winning a little bit. Then they got to the playoffs.
Got it.
Bud Black was another one, but then the only reason he ended up leaving San Diego is because he went to Colorado, and then they actually got good. So that was a little bit weird there. But Servais.
But the dynamic is different in that supposedly everybody's on board with the plan. All right, we're tearing it down. So with that, you understand it's not going to be pretty.
Right.
For a little while here. Now.
But does that mean he and DePoto get 4 years of a grace period where they're just here?
I think in theory, yes, but in practice, probably not.
Well, it depends on if you're seeing the improvement in the areas you target, the youth, right? Or is the youth coming up? First of all, are you acquiring the right talent, the young guys? And when they come up, are they starting to produce? Are you starting to see? Yeah, wins and losses become secondary, and that still feels weird to say, but you're looking at the development of the guys that are here. How does Crawford look? How does Narvaez look? How does Santana, anybody you perceive to be part of the future, how do they look?
Well, the question becomes, how long are wins and losses secondary?
I think realistically it's got to be a couple years. I mean, if you're being honest about it, unless they come in and acquire a bunch of proven talent, start spending money to add to what's going on here, okay, then your expectations change. But if you're just going, hey, youth movement, we're gonna put some duct tape in these spots with some players that are past their prime, your expectations can't be, we're competing for the postseason. No, you're not.
There's no scenario I can see where they're good next year.
I don't think they're going to be good for a few years. Unless they open the purse strings and they say, yeah, we're developing youth, but we're going to bring in this proven talent, some of these big-time names to help us compete along the way.
Do you think that the next couple of off seasons will resemble the one we just got through, where they bring in Bruce and Encarnacion and then trade them away in a couple of months? It could.
Sure,
it could. I mean, you need players out there, right? But as it is right now, I mean, you can feel the team essentially with your young players.
Well, they didn't acquire Encarnacion and Bruce in terms of signing them. They traded for them.
Right. They were really, parts of trade. Yeah.
They don't really have the pieces to trade like they did last year when they were breaking it down. Mm-hmm. So I would say that it'll be an active offseason, but it'll be a different offseason.
If only they had another Robinson Cano.
Trade for three guys.
To trade.
Oh. Maybe we can get him back. Yeah, the Mets are falling apart.
You might be able to get them to pick up part of what you were going to pick up in order to take him back.
Right. Can we do that and get Jason Vargas? Throw in Jason Vargas. We'll stick him in the bullpen.
Longtime Mariner fans remember in the days before they got good where the Mariners' credo was to draft and create good players, then trade them for three guys who couldn't play.
This is pre-Lou Piniella,
right? Pre-Lou Piniella.
Yes.
How'd that work out?
Not good.
Very poorly.
How many guys did they trade away other than, they got Buehner back, actually. How many guys did they trade away that they ended up regretting?
Back. No, they traded for
they
Buehner.
Got they Buehner, traded for Buehner. That's what
yes.
I mean. But how many guys did the pre-Lou Piniella Mariners trade away that we looked at where we said, oh, they shouldn't have done that?
I don't have to go
Veritek, Eric Lowe.
No, that's post.
Oh, you're just talking pre. Okay, I thought you meant period. I was
right.
going to say that's
he's talking about
that's
the old
most egregious.
Right. Well, yeah, but they were at least in a period of time right there
right.
where they were winning.
It's still the one that just stands out, though. Is the
understood.
Worst. Yeah.
Well, let's listen to a couple of these sound bites here. This is an exchange between Passan and Salk. And, Bob, I think it addresses the very thing you just talked about.
Do you make an argument that you've seen legitimate growth from the players that are actually going to be here long term? Malik Smith has gotten better over the course of the year. Domingo Santana has gotten better over the course of the year. Daniel Vogelbach has been a productive player. J.P. Crawford, who the Phillies couldn't seem to do anything with, has turned himself into a guy who's got an OPS over 800 and has played really good defense. The building block pieces have been great. It's the Kyle Seegers and Jay Bruces of the world. You kind of shrug your shoulders and say, eh, oh, well. I mean, how does that reflect on the manager?
Totally fair and reasonable point. Totally airtight logic, and none of it matters.
Well, the other thing about it,
true.
Too, is let me ask you guys this about the service question. Does he get evaluated on the previous 3 years, or does he just start now? You're judging him now. Is the clock reset, and you forget about what happened last year, the year before? He's got a brand new start.
Well, it depends on what they're rating the manager on. And this is going to lead us into another conversation that we're going to have about what's going on in the New York Met clubhouse. What does a manager actually do here in the Seattle Mariners situation? Because you're talking about the last couple of years.
Right.
Are you going to take that into account? Well, what's he responsible for?
Well, I mean, if you go,
they didn't fire him.
We just go to last year, a collapse.
Mm-hmm. It's on his watch.
He presided over it.
Right. So what does that mean? That he can't handle veteran players?
That's the question, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, does that factor into your thinking? Because Bob is right. I mean, it's very, very hard to evaluate this year when you're given
rubble, pile of rubble,
a deck with 30 cards. You know, when you just don't have the tools.
Well, you guys don't think that Service's job is in jeopardy this year, though.
No,
I don't.
Okay, I don't either.
If they fired him, I would honestly question what are your expectations?
Yeah, what's our direction?
And who would have done a better job? Tell me where he slipped up individually. We can nitpick every manager in the league every game. There are 8 million moments across a baseball season where you can go, huh? Why'd you do that? Why didn't you bunt there? Why didn't you move the runner along? Why didn't you pinch hit for this guy?
Why didn't you argue with the umpire?
Well, they do it with every manager in every city. I've been there and I've heard it about the best in the game. So the idea that he's going to be above criticism, no, he'll never be above that. But to say that what we're seeing is his fault, I think even if you don't like service, you have to be realistic enough to understand and admit, yeah, he doesn't have really anything to work with currently. So it's not, I can't look at this season and go, well, it's the manager's fault.
Well, to Graz's point, though, Graz, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
go ahead.
Going forward, I think maybe part of the concern is, all right, well, once this team gets good, will Service then be able to handle that? Because we've seen that in the past couple of years. If you criticize Service at all in the last 3 years when the team was actually competitive, that's your concern going forward, is that, okay, once these guys develop into something, can the team be trusted with Scott Service at the helm then?
Mm-hmm.
I think the question about Service might wind up being, if they let him go, it's to have him do something else in the organization, that he may be better at developing guys, you know, down in the minors or overseeing what's going on there. And they need someone else to manage. They like him in there right now because it is a caretaker position right now, and he can handle that, but they have other plans for him. That's the scenario where I see him leaving.
That'd be a demotion, though. I mean, if they won, they wouldn't move him down to the farm level or whatever. What are you talking about?
I'm not
being a farm director?
That's not necessarily a demotion.
No, it's an executive position in the front office.
Yeah. Exactly. So that would be my scenario. If he's there, if he's not there to continue to be manager, it's because they believe he'd do a better job doing that.
I wonder if he would welcome that. It could be part of the plan all along.
If DePoto's gone, that job's not happening for him. He'll be gone.
That's correct.
Who said anything about that?
Huh?
Who said anything about DePoto being gone?
Well, I think if you start pointing fingers and you start saying, why isn't this working, as much as I say you can't blame Service for what's on the field, you can blame Jerry DePoto for what's on the field and what's
definitely
not on the field. So, you know, if we're talking about hot seats and who's under more pressure,
DePoto
it's
first.
DePoto. Now, they're connected. If DePoto goes, Service is going to go. That's just how it works. Guy's going to come in, new GM, he's going to want to bring in his own manager. But if we're looking at, all right, who's to blame for what we're seeing right now? As much as it's not Scott, it is Jerry.
Sure, but brought the players in.
Yeah, but Stanton's all, you know, everybody signed off on this. This is what you signed up for.
Yeah, I'm not even sure that there's anything to be blamed for right now.
I don't sense there's any pressure on
I didn't board. Either. I mean, we're speculating on what could happen down the line should this not work out, because we thought that this year would be a step back year, not a complete tear it down rebuild. That's what we were told by the organization. We were told step back by DePoto, and John Stanton told us opening day that this team was going to win some games. They are far, far worse than either one of those two things.
Yeah, but if we are being realistic and you looked at the moves they made, they can call it whatever they want and say whatever they want. The proof is in the pudding. When you watch what they're doing, you're going, oh, they're tearing it down. They could call it a reimagination. It's a step back. No. You're rebuilding. Look at the moves you made. Look at who you've gotten rid of.
But does that mean, Bob, that they're behind schedule, that they're just further back than they thought they would be?
I can't see that. I mean, look, because of their ridiculous start, they're actually not in as bad shape as the Royals are or the Orioles are. But the start counts.
It doesn't, though, when you're evaluating the progress of your rebuild. When DePoto looks at this team, where are we? Do you think he looks at 13-2 and says, okay, that's part of the reality of where we are?
I think you always look at the overall record. Always, even if you're just evaluating individual talent wise, you're always looking at the overall.
So, what do you take from that 13-2 start that still is true today?
You don't throw it out, is my point. My point is, and so you're asking, is this a step back? That's a disaster. I'm saying no. I mean, it's not good. But even last week, you had the two worst teams in, and you took the series from them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a little thing.
Yeah.
You're not the worst team in baseball.
Look, with guys like Jay Bruce and Encarnacion and even Ryan Healy involved in
is
that 13-2
back,
start.
By the way?
What does he have? That spinal stenosis?
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
Didn't narrowing of this. Yeah. So he's on a rehab, and we'll see what happens with him.
Yeah. I don't consider him part of the future necessarily.
No. I don't
know. With this, it's a huge question mark.
Right.
I mean, it was already a question mark. All right, how does he fit? You've got Vogel back. It was made easier with when they jettisoned Bruce and Encarnacion. That made it a little easier. But still, you wonder, all right, is he going to be your guy? All right, are you going to be okay with Santana in the field every day and Vogelbach is your DH and Healy's your first baseman? Okay. It was hinging on Santana, and can he be a serviceable outfielder? And right now it looks like he can.
He can be.
So
in right field.
And just on the positive real quick, the reason why the record has been as bad as it is since 13-2 is because of the bullpen, which doesn't matter. You're not looking at the bullpen and saying, this is part of our rebuild right now. This is part of our progress.
No, right.
That is the,
everybody,
I mean, you guys agree?
Everybody in there is duct tape.
Right, and even the starting rotation, most of the starting rotation,
yes,
is not part of the future. Those are the reasons why the team is as bad as it is. They mm-hmm. can hit. They can score some runs.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So,
their problem is
all,
pitching and fielding.
Fielding.
Fielding's been atrocious.
Fielding, Bob.
Yes, atrocious. Here's Passan talking about service being in job-saving mode.
When you're in job-saving mode, and I don't think Jerry Dipoto, after getting his extension last year, has to fret for his job. I will say Scott Service does, though. I think at the end of this year, some heads are going to have to roll, and the managers is the likeliest to really have a big impact.
For what reason? I mean, I get what he's saying. I disagree. He may end up being right. Maybe at the end of the season, they'll say, hey, we're moving on.
Maybe some coaches, but
I don't understand that logic, saying, well, some heads have to roll. All right, you all signed up for this. You all know you fire somebody because they didn't do the job they were signed up to do.
You
now, what's not being done? You all signed up for a rebuild. Call it what you want. It's a rebuild.
Yep.
You understood it was going to be a really down year. I understand 13-2 kind of threw everybody off course, but they have regressed back to what they really are. So how at the end of the year do you go, you know what, Scott? You just didn't do what we wanted you to do this year.
It would have to be something internal.
It'd have to be the young guys are not performing, or they're not progressing.
He's not developing them, or he's not developing them in the way that management dictates.
You can already argue that he's doing that.
That he's doing it or not doing it.
He is doing it.
Yeah, I think so.
Look at Vogelbach. Look at Crawford. These are guys who they're pinning the future on, and they both look good.
Yeah, and Malik, and again,
Malik Smith
depends on who you consider to be part of the future. We don't know, but you just look at the younger acquisitions. Malik is starting to turn the corner, looking like the player that they traded for. Santana looks decidedly better in right field. He's hitting again. So, guys, you can sit there and tag and go, well, I think he could be part of the future, are playing pretty well right now. So that's what I would say. That's probably what matters most. And passing. Talked about the success of the young players and how it relates to service.
Do you make an argument that you've seen legitimate growth from the players that are actually going to be here long term? Malik Smith has gotten better over the course of the year. Domingo Santana has gotten better over the course of the year. Daniel Vogelbach has been a productive player. J.P. Crawford, who the Phillies couldn't seem to do anything with, has turned himself into a guy who's got an OPS over 800 and has played really good defense. The building block pieces have been great. It's the Kyle Seegers and Jay Bruces of the world. You kind of shrug your shoulders and say, eh, oh, well. I mean, how does that reflect on the manager?
Totally fair and reasonable point. Totally airtight logic, and none of it matters.
Yeah, just wanted to reiterate what he was saying there, is all of these guys right now are pointing the right direction, headed the right direction, and in the mind of Jeff Passan, again, he's not the end-all, be-all. He's giving his opinion. You just heard him say that the service could be in trouble, and there he's saying it doesn't matter.
And keep in mind,
how does it not matter?
When he says it doesn't matter, I'm not sure if he's talking about at the end of this year, the end of 2020, end of 2021. At some point, the team does have to win, regardless of whatever progress they make.
Right, and here he is talking about, you know, when are they going to be ready to compete? You know, is it? We've heard from Jerry, we've heard from Stan, we've heard from service 2020. It's not about this year; it's about next year and beyond. We've all sat here and said, that's wildly optimistic. I don't buy it. Here's what Passan thinks of that.
In my mind, the logical follow-up to that answer is, when are you going to be competitive? Because honestly, it's not going to be 2021. Sorry, if that's the target that you had, ain't happening. There's just not enough there in the minor league system right now to make that a realistic possibility.
So not only is he poo-pooing 20, he doesn't even mention 20. If 21's your target, ain't happening.
It sounds personal, doesn't it?
He sounds like he's got some glee in his voice.
It ain't happening, man. Forget it. You're terrible.
If you thought you were going to be decent in 21, think again.
You're nothing.
Well, they don't have enough prospects is his point.
He might be right.
And right now, you'd have to say that he probably is right.
I don't think they're going to win in 2021. No.
I think they need to show improvement every year. I don't think they need to be in the postseason in 21. But we can't see this for 3 years. You need to see them take whatever they're told. Let's say they win 73 games this year, right? You better be a better team next year. Crawford better take the next step. And Santana and Vogelback and all these guys better take the next step. And maybe you're going to bring in some pieces like you did this year. You're going to get incrementally better each year.
If you want to look at Houston, that's not the case. Houston was terrible for 3 years, 50, 55, 60 wins for 3 years running before they showed any improvement, and their improvement was then rapid.
Right, because at some point they actually had the nucleus of their team together. At first they were – see, the thing with the Mariners right now, I think we all believe that some of the guys that are on the field will be there 4 or 5 years from now. I mean, we kind of have to think that. Otherwise, there's just no point in talking about this at all. Right?
Yeah.
With Houston in 2010 or 11, they were a bad team that didn't have a ton of their nucleus, the one that we know now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They didn't have those guys out there. There's that kind of losing, and then there's young players who are supposed to develop. Those guys losing. Right now, I'm not really sure what we have.
I agree with you.
I don't think they know what they've got either. I think there's potential.
We need at least two or three more homegrown pitchers.
At least.
Yep.
I'm talking about like in the rotation.
I agree with you.
Unless you think in 2022 they want to go out and spend money, which I'm not opposed to.
Well, and that's the wild card in all of it. If we're just looking at the development of the young players and you're going to sprinkle in some veteran help, but it's not going to be superstars. It's going to be the Encarnacion, the Bruces, that kind of move. You're looking at the home. You're not going to be ready nearly as soon. And we talked to Stan. You've got the cut here. I think this is when we talked to him on opening day, right? Mm-hmm. Here he was talking about this season and what he expects this team to be in the coming future.
We're going to play competitive baseball this year. This is not a, I hate the phrase step back. We're struggling with the right words. We're going to be good. Because most of the teams that rebuild get rid of all of their payroll. We've got some well-paid players on our team. Those are players that I think will help us win games this year. I can't promise you we'll win a World Series this year, but I will promise you we're going to win one in the next couple of years.
We've got well-paid players, but they're not actually on this team. They're playing for Philadelphia. They're playing for the Mets.
Or they're hurt.
Or they're...
They didn't have as many as he did, right?
Yeah, and listen, I'm not sure what we expect the owner of the team to say the day that they open at home.
Well, John Stanton just wants to win. He was excited that day. We were excited that day. There were a million people out there. It was his time to come on and just say, look, I believe in what we're doing. That's how that translates. Just because he said we're going to win the World Series, I'm not going to hold his feet to the fire on that, are you?
No, he's not the guy who's out there evaluating the talent. He's hired the people to do that job.
He's the one who holds other people's feet to the fire.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. And he signs off on it as much as he says, we're struggling to find the right terms. I hate the term, step back. Well, that's not the right term. It's a rebuild.
It's a fall down.
It's what it is, man.
Sometimes in the heat of the moment, you say things.
And he looked like he was right there for a bit, right? Because he said,
yes,
hey, we're going to be good. We're going to win some games this year. And you're going, okay. Because I remember we looked at each other like, oh, all right.
You look like
a
genius.
And then they got off to a 13-2 start going, Stan knew what he was talking about.
We were having conversations about whether or not we'd have to ditch Bruce or Encarnacion at all.
Yep.
Hang on to him if they keep winning. Nope. Not
yeah.
there anymore.
It's going to be a rough go. Just they need to continue to show progress, especially with the core, the people you perceive to be part of the core. We'll see who's actually part of it as it rolls on. Again, Michael Bradley, El Hombre, joins us at 1 o'clock today. Meanwhile, the controversy coming out of the Mets clubhouse has an odd twist. We'll talk about that next with Bob Gros and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob Gros and Tom.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll tell you about a very disgusting way to build the perfect athlete. You're going to want to tune in for that one. Let's give you your pitching matchup brought to you by Heritage Distilling Company, makers of BSB Brown Sugar Bourbon. Your matchup is...
Marco Gonzalez, 8-6, 4.38 ERA. He's been better lately.
Yeah, he's turned things around.
It's a real test tonight.
Yeah, against Zach Davies, who's going to take time out of being an engineer for us here in our studio. He's 7-1 with a 3.06 ERA, and nobody got that joke except the people here.
Yeah, because nobody knows who he is.
Yeah, we have a guy working in the building who's an engineer named Zach Davies, who also pitches for the Milwaukee Brewers.
And he's a great guy.
Split duty. Good. Good for him.
He's really good at both.
He's really good. Reliable. Good stuff.
That's better than Ohtani could do.
How did the Brewers get good?
Well, you bring in a guy like Yelich, that'll help out.
So it was pretty much...
They've made some good moves.
I mean, the way they built their team?
Yeah.
Well, Jack Z built it up in like 08, and then they were bad, then they built it back up again.
So they did it through the farm system for the most part.
I think.
Well, for the most part, but again, you brought in maybe one of the best players in all of baseball, and Yelich.
Well, but they drafted him, right?
No.
No, he came from the Miami.
Oh, they made a deal.
But they had Ryan Braun. They had Ryan Braun. They've got a couple of pitch. I mean, they got rid of, who's that guy that was here? Giovanni Gallardo.
Ricky Weeks.
That probably helped.
So Ricky Weeks.
Corey Hart.
Legendary Mariners.
Those are all Jack Z guys.
Yeah. Yeah. They came through. All right. By the way, are you wearing a Brewers hat, Ashley? What is that about? What's going on there?
What are you doing?
I like the Brewers. They're not my number one team, but I like them.
You're wearing a Brewers hat on the day of the start of the series between the two teams, featuring one that you work for?
That's a team stolen from Seattle.
Wow. I'm getting so much heat for wearing a hat. When it's like 90% of my wardrobe is Mariners gear, I can't wear one hat.
No. All I'm saying is it's game one of the series between these two heated, hated rivals here. You work for one of the teams, and you're wearing the hat of the opposition.
Does it make you any better if I actually bought this at Miller Park last year?
No.
Miller Park's pretty cool place.
I was working. Oh, my gosh.
Look at Howdy's having none of it. He's sitting behind you just shaking his head.
That's just awful. You should just be ripped to shreds for this.
I'm just going to own it. I don't care.
You're a Milwaukee sympathizer, and I don't appreciate it.
Well, it's just that it was a Seattle team.
Yeah, they were the Seattle Pilots.
Okay, well, I've got an Angels hat, I've got a Rockies hat, I've got a Boston hat, an L.A. hat, an Atlanta.
You shouldn't be wearing any of those. What are you doing?
Don't try to change the subject.
Isn't that against company policy?
No.
Didn't the Mariners send out some sort of directive?
I have a favorite, but if I want to wear this hat, I'm going to wear the hat.
Okay, question. In 2027, when the Brewers play the Mariners in the World Series, who are you going to root for? What hat are you going to wear?
I'm going to wear my Mariners hat because that's my first team.
Okay. Problem solved.
That's what I said. It's like the Mariners are still my favorite, but I want to wear this hat.
Okay.
Ashley, do you think the Mariners will be in the 2027 World Series?
I would like to say yes. As a positive
person. You would like to
say
yes, but are you saying yes?
Do you think any of the current players will be on that team?
In 20, what did you say, 27?
Well, we'll say 2025. 2025.
I was like, 8 years is a long time.
I bet you Tom Murphy's still here by then.
I would be okay with that.
Slugging 18 home runs a year.
Tom Murphy's still, he's the lone holdout.
We might have one or two. We'll leave it at that.
Marco Gonzalez will still be working on his cutter.
Oh, yeah.
Kikuchi will still have an opener. LeBlanc will be out there as a pitching coach at that point.
Man.
Yeah, all right.
We'll be in the NL West by then.
Hey, we talked a bit about this yesterday, the turmoil going on in New York with the New York Mets. And they've got a couple things going on. First of all,
Mickey Callaway is still the manager.
For the time
which
being.
Is an upset.
Has he gotten the kiss of death, which is the vote of confidence?
No, but Gabe Kapler got that. We'll ask that about Ombre in a few minutes.
Yeah, they've lost seven in a row, and he got the what amounts to the kiss of death when you get the vote of confidence from the higher ups. But here's a what's this guy's last name? Ehalt? Matt?
Yes.
All right. Tweeted out, source confirms that Mets GM Brody Van
Wagenen
has acted during games, texting to staffers, including to remove Jacob deGrom during that Arizona start earlier this year, in which he left early. It's happened more than once.
So the GM is now texting into the dugout to make in-game decisions. First question, does this surprise you guys?
Yes.
It does.
Based on where they're at now, not really. It feels like such a mess.
Yeah, I mean, I guess putting it that way.
It feels like a mess, so when you read this, you go, yeah, that sounds about right.
What I mean is across baseball, more and more, it appears that the games are being run by the general manager and not the manager. The whole organizational philosophy, hey, we're going to use this guy this way, you're going to use an opener here, you're going to do this, that's not all Scott Servais or Mickey Callaway making those decisions. That's disgust.
I still don't think there are guys that are texting. That's Steinbrenner-esque.
That's a bit much. Also a bit much for that news to get out into the public now.
Well, if it's going to get out, it's going to get out in New York, right?
Of course, especially with a team that's floundering right now.
Are we assuming that's becoming more the norm?
I do. I don't know about texting. Into the dugout, just because of the way organizations are built and run.
But have we heard something definitive or even sources talking about other – because I don't recall hearing this about another team, whether it's the Mariners or the Dodgers or anybody else for that matter.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the Dodgers. I forget what the kid's name was. There was a young kid who had a no-hitter going a few years ago. May have been last year. And Dave Roberts pulled him from the game. But I remember when they were discussing that, and a couple times where that sort of thing has happened, they make decisions as an organization. It's not the manager just going with his gut feeling on it. Mm. All of these decisions that are being made are informed decisions based on what the organizational philosophies are. Well, now, that doesn't mean that Jerry DePoto is texting into service saying, hey, pull Adams from the game. I don't think that it's gone that far here, but who knows? Maybe it has.
I'd be shocked if it has.
Shocked?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if this is reaching every, like, this is just becoming the norm, and yeah, you're only hearing about it now.
I think you might be right, Tom.
I mean, you might be right.
And again, he might be wrong. I mean, we don't know. I'm just saying, this is the only time we've heard about sources reporting it, is all I'm saying.
But Bob, could I be right?
You could be right.
Okay.
But then again, maybe not. But outside of that, they've got issues that run deeper, as we touched on yesterday, and they had some advances in the story after we talked about it yesterday. There was a dust-up with a writer out there, in which which the manager got into his face, told him to leave, cursed at him, and then Jason Vargas swelled up on him and said, I'll knock you the bleep out, bro.
Jason Vargas ain't knocking anybody out, first of all.
So yeah, it got heated between them, and then the owner of the team apologized to the writer and wants you to feel good about doing your job and you're welcome back in here, all that good stuff. So they brought up the manager to the podium to straighten this whole mess out there, Mr. Callaway. And here's a bit of what he had to say to sort of justify what happened.
Yeah, I mean, Billy Martin punched a reporter one time. You know, I mean, it's just part of this game. You know, it's something that, I'm a passionate guy about baseball, and I'm a tough competitor. And sometimes you'll see it with the umpires. Sometimes you'll see it with the players. And the thing is you guys don't need to see it directed towards you guys. That's you guys have a job to do. I understand that. I've always understood that. And you guys don't need it directed at you.
I guarantee
that red light flashing in the corner, Mickey. That's your career dissipation light.
Exactly. The next Met manager, I guarantee you, will be in lockstep with what the organization wants him to do. Yep. No gut decisions, no old school Lou Piniella, hey, I'm just going to do this.
I'm a fiery competitor.
Nope. And certainly not a guy who uses Billy Martin as an example of how to behave yourself.
Trying to minimize what he did, saying, hey, he punched somebody. I just told him to get the bleep out of here and cursed at him. Here he is just talking about how he regrets what he did.
Just real quick, I understand that I got some feedback that...
By the way, this is when he left and then came back to the podium.
Right.
Because he didn't apologize the first time. He came and did his Billy Martin thing and whatever. And then I think somebody in the PR staff said, well, dude, you forgot the biggest part of this whole thing is the apology.
The point.
So this is after the return to the podium. And now it's not playing.
I get it.
Just real quick, I understand that I got some feedback that, that I wanted you guys to know that in my meeting with Tim, I apologize for my reaction. I regret it. I regret the distraction it's caused to the team. And, like I said earlier, it's something that we'll learn from. It's something I'm not proud of. I'm not proud of the distraction. I'm not proud of what I did to Tim. For that, I'm definitely sorry.
Yeah.
And then Vargas was talking about the situation.
Not exactly remorseful.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot like maybe the first go-around for Callaway there before he came back to the podium. Here's Jason Vargas.
I think everybody's aware of the situation that happened yesterday. I think it's unfortunate for all parties, an unfortunate distraction. But tonight we got the Phillies to play. The team addressed the situation. The organization's made a statement. And, that's really all there is to it. So thanks for taking your time, and we'll see you guys after the game.
Not exactly
not
an apology.
Sorry.
But you know what? I'll give
you
him
credit. I don't think he owes anyone an apology.
Well, didn't he jump in the middle and say all?
He's the one that he stood up and had to be held back, according to the story, took some steps towards him and says, I'll knock you the bleep out, bro.
Right.
But even the writer said it wasn't that aggressive.
Somebody termed that he charged him. He goes, charge is a little much. He didn't charge. He took some steps toward him. Some players got in front of him, and he's screaming, I'll knock you the bleep out.
Well, I can appreciate that if he's not sorry for doing that, I don't want an apology from him. I don't want the Ryan Leaf apology.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. He's being who he is. He's not sorry. Don't say you're sorry.
By Ryan Leaf apology, I mean like 20 years ago.
Disingenuous.
When he did, when he read it off a little piece of paper, then crumpled it up and threw it in a locker.
Yeah. Right. All right, there you go. So all is right in the world of the New York Mets, by God.
Hey, they're in worse shape than the Mariners are, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
47 and 51, though.
And look at the pitcher. Wait, what do you mean? That they're still in contention?
In theory.
Yeah, they're not going. They're not going anywhere.
That thing's ready to explode.
Think about squandering the talent of Matt Harvey, Noah Syndergaard, and
Jacob
DeGrom. That's pathetic.
All right, coming up, a disgusting way to build the perfect athlete. Wait a minute, what? Coming up with Bob Gross and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's Bob Gross and Tom.
Hold up. Hold up.
Hey, wait a minute.
What?
Wait a minute.
What?
It is Wait a Minute What here with Bob Gross and Tom. Coming up at the top of the hour, El Hombre, Michael Bradley. And no, it's not El Diablo, as Dave Wyman seems to like to call him.
That's not bad, though.
The devil?
Yeah, it's not El Diablo, it's El Hombre.
Hombre just means man, right? The man.
Yeah, the man.
Buddy.
Yeah.
He's the man.
He's not the devil.
The devil.
He's the man. So he's going to join us at the top of the hour, as he does every Tuesday at 1 o'clock. A couple of stories here for you. First of all, this is a sad story to me. Jalen Ramsey.
This is sad?
Yeah. Now avoids dissing quarterbacks. Quote, I'm growing. What a shame. He was one of the more outspoken cornerbacks. He sort of filled in the gap that Richard Sherman left there in terms of ripping on opposition and things like that. I found it entertaining.
There's always one guy who does that.
Yeah. From a distance, it just kind of cracked me up. I mean, you remember he called Josh Allen from the Bills trash. And, you know, he called Matt Ryan overrated.
Why do guys have to grow up?
I know.
Why can't you stay?
Maturity really is overrated.
But the good news there is that there's always a new influx of young kids coming into the league to be brash and arrogant.
Well,
so you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, he was, I guess he was doing an interview and he says, somebody asked him about quarterbacks. He said, you want to do this again, huh? I'm not going to do this again, but we play some good quarterbacks this year. And he says, of course, but probably the quarterback I'm most excited for is Nick Foles. He was talking to Adam Schefter. He says, I don't have to play against him, of course. He's my teammate. He's a great teammate, blah, blah, blah. But then they talk about what he had said about previous quarterbacks, and he's saying, I'm growing, man. It's year four for me. It's a different me. A lot of people think they know me. They don't really know me. But, hey, that's okay.
Whatever.
He's getting philosophical.
Whatever you say, man.
They think they know you. Well, they're just going on who you've been the past 3 years, so now you've changed, and I guess everybody will catch up with the change that's been made.
When you're a trash talker and you're on a team that is just utterly irrelevant, nobody cares.
Well, they were in the AFC title game
that
year, and then they just fell on their face
that
the next
one year.
Year.
They were good. They were 10-6, but remember what Rex Ryan said about them, the most overrated defense he had ever seen.
Yeah. And then he really wanted to let you know what he thought of Bortles,
right.
But stopped short.
Ramsey's a good player, but, you know.
Yeah. So he's growing, and that's sad for entertainment purposes.
How surprised would you be if you saw Shaq Griffin out there talking trash about whoever?
I would be stunned.
I would wonder what happened to him.
I'm going
to
steal Cam Newton's lunch money.
Yeah, if he just became
180 for that guy.
If he became Richard, if he became Jalen Ramsey, it'd be, whoa, what the heck happened? You bump your head?
You'd see right through it.
Yeah,
I'd wonder what happened.
Wonder about it. It wouldn't be automatically just funny or.
He is such a nice, humble guy. Mm-hmm. It'd be disconcerting. You'd be going, what's going on here? This isn't right.
It's like when Russell Wilson tries to be funny.
Oh,
you see right through it.
Oh, boy.
It just sort of goes, pew, poom.
Do you have that on here?
We'll come back to that.
You want to come back to it?
Yeah.
Okay. Story number two. I think we talked about this off the air in one of our many music conversations, but. Guitar player for Pink Floyd, David Gilmour.
One of my all-time favorites.
Apparently has no sentimental attachment to anything he owns in terms of guitars. None. In fact, so much so that he auctioned them all off and raised in the neighborhood of $21.5 million.
Jeez Louise.
$21.5 million. And by the way, he's donating every single penny of that.
Good for him.
Yeah, he's proceeds from the auction go to Client Earth, an environmental organization fighting climate change. So the big prize in this whole thing was a black Strat that he played on Dark Side of the Moon, The Wall, Animals. Sold to Jim Irsay
for nearly $4 million.
That's incredible.
Jim Irsay.
One guitar.
He's got the money.
Oh, he's so good.
Had a unique sound, didn't he?
David Gilmour did more with one note than any musician, I think, ever in the history of rock music. He's that good.
Did you know this about Irsay, though? I guess they said he made two smaller purchases at the auction. Says Irsay has frequently made headline-grabbing purchases of musical instruments. I'd never really
heard. Yeah, he's a collector.
I think I'd heard that.
In April, he bought the piano John Lennon used to compose songs for the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club album for $718,750. 2016, he paid $137,500 to buy the Yellow Cloud electric guitar that Prince used in numerous concerts until the mid-90s.
Hmm. You know, if Paul Allen were alive, this is something that he might have wanted to get in on.
You think he would have put it in the EMP? Or the,
maybe. Sure, I mean, we know that he was a collector of that stuff, and he was way into it. It wouldn't have surprised me.
Irsay also has acquired instruments once owned by musicians Jerry Garcia, the Grateful Dead, singer-songwriter Bob Dylan, and Ringo Starr of the Beatles. In 2015, he paid $1.75 million for Starr's drum set. I didn't realize he was such a collector of music.
I need to go hang out at Irsay's place.
Dang.
Got a museum, I'll bet.
Actually, Graz, I saw the picture that went along with this article. It looked like he was in a museum, but sure, it was actually
it was
his
basement,
house. Yeah.
Right?
By the way, the publication said the sale price of the Black Strat far exceeded expectations. It said the estimated price range had been $100,000
to $150,000.
Just under $4 million.
What's your favorite? Well, you're a Pink Floyd guy, right?
Love them.
What's your favorite album?
Animals.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Mm. My favorite song, though, is
Wish You Were Here.
Okay. I love Sheep as a song. I think The Wall is still my favorite, though.
So one of the best concerts I ever saw was The Wall.
All right. Coming up, one of El Hombre's favorite guys got the dreaded vote of confidence. Will he survive? We'll ask Michael about that. He joins us next year with Bob Gross and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.